Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
What up, America? Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Wow, what a weekend. What a weekend. Hope you had a good one. My picks were good. I think pretty darn good. We'll get to those. We'll recap them. Better than the Patriots offense. Better than the Rams at home. Man, do we got a lot to get to. Seismic ton to get to. Let's dig in with the Patriots, shall we? Right? Because sunrise in the east and sets in the west, and the Patriots always seem to beat the Steelers until yesterday, when, in spite of the fact the defense played well enough for them to win the game, it was the offense that let them down. Now, I've seen the breakdowns from Dan Orlovsky that he shows over on the other network that, hey, they're double-teaming Gronk, they're double-teaming Edelman, and they're saying somebody else beat us and no one else can beat it. And some of this is the change we've seen in the Patriots. And that change, very simply, that change is that they are no longer a spread-you-out, underneath, sharp-cutting team. They, at their core, want to be a power running team. A power running team that uses play action, that uses Sony Michel to create openings for their wide receivers, or the previous two, Edelman and Gronkowski, who were mentioned. The problem with that is the Steelers have changed and evolved. They're still good against the run, but they can play man-to-man defensively, what they couldn't do previously. Previous regime, different defense, different personnel. They've evolved and changed. And so the matchup is actually more favorable to Pittsburgh than it used to be. And so some of it was matchup-based. But here's my biggest takeaway. Like, look, some of these takeaways are really simple. You watch the Colts and you watch the Cowboys. Daniel Jeremiah joins us every week on the show. Daniel Jeremiah, of course, Move the Sticks podcast, former front office executive, former quarterback in his own right, current analyst for the NFL Network, and he says tractor or trailer, right? A tractor can pull an entire franchise. A trailer is good, but has to be pulled by others. You watch the Colts, you watch the Cowboys, one quarterback is a tractor, Andrew Luck, one quarterback is a trailer, Dak Prescott. That analysis is pretty simple. And you know what? Here's some analysis you need from the New England Patriots. The Patriots look a little bit long in the tooth? Yep. Five of the times seem to be catching up with Tom Brady? Yep. Do they appear to have a little bit better defense and a little bit worse offense? Yep. And you know who is not surprised by any of this? That would be William Belichick. I'm always blown away by this idea that Bill Belichick somehow lost it before the Super Bowl last year. You know, I know he's been a genius. I know he's authored the greatest franchise in modern football history. I am not a Patriots fan. Okay? I am not. I've never worn a Patriots jersey. I've been to Patriots games. Hey, I'm not I don't cheer for really any team. I'm a Charger fan, but even them, I'm not a pom-pom waving Charger fan. But if you cannot at least admit that that's the most successful franchise in the history of professional football's modern era, you're not paying attention. And you can sit there and say, well, they went a decade without winning a Super Bowl. Yes, but all that entire decade, they had double-digit wins. You go on 17 straight years of dominance in a league which is designed to make the best move back down, right? First place schedules hurt first place teams. Fourth place schedules help fourth place teams. So that everyone is 9-7, 7-9, all these games at the end of the season, or as many of them as possible, actually matter. So he has authored the greatest franchise in the history of modern professional football. We're okay with that? Good. And you can make the argument, and I would, it's the greatest franchise run in the history of professional sports. because it's had a salary cap, because they've had different incarnations, because they've played different styles, and because of how the league is designed, as opposed to Major League Baseball, when the Yankees won, for example, their five World Series with Derek Jeter there, the fact is that that sport is not created the same. Everybody is not intended to be equal. Didn't have a salary cap, then they put in the luxury tax. It's not the same as an actual hard salary cap. And first place to fourth place schedules. That's what the NFL has. I'd offer to you that the Patriots are the greatest, they have the greatest run in the history of modern professional sports. So, when he didn't play Malcolm Butler, except for one play in the Super Bowl, suddenly he became an egomaniac who had a personal vendetta against a player because of contract negotiations or whatever reason. Or he knows a hell of a lot more about football than we do. Now, I think a certain portion of it is he may have been willing to lose a game in order to win this year and win in the future. No player puts himself above. Some of it might be that he had more information than we've ever been given about Malcolm Butler. Like, remember, people don't tell the entire story about Malcolm Butler. He had not only been awful most of the year, he was awful in the playoffs. And he didn't show up for workouts and checked himself into the hospital the day before the team was going to leave, and he wasn't on the team flight to the Super Bowl. Like, man, how could he not play him? Well, because when he was putting in his game plan, he didn't know if he was going to be in the hospital or not. And if you don't think there's a breakdown in communication between player and team, why didn't the player go to the team doctor? Anyone? Anyone? So, with all that being said, there was this assumption that Bill Belichick had lost it. Or maybe Bill Belichick knew. Because remember, the other story we heard about last year was Bill Belichick was putting things in position so that he would have an heir apparent, a successor to Tom Brady. Tom Brady's own dad about 5 years ago said, hey, he expected Tom Brady to play elsewhere to end his career because that's what happens with Patriots. And the story came out that Belichick wanted to have a backup in place to eventually be the successor so that they keep the run going, and ownership overruled him. So when yesterday Tom Brady looked old. I'm not saying that it was all his fault that Rob Gronkowski doesn't look old. Gronk looks old. But the same approach they had with Gronk was, hey, dude, we're not going to give you a big new long-term contract because we know that you're about a year away from being washed. They didn't go through all those different wide receivers in the preseason, early in the season, because they felt good about their group. None of this stuff is new information to Bill Belichick. None of it. You think Bill Belichick knows that they look old? He's like, yep. I told them, this is what's going to happen if we hold on to guys. The Patriot way has never been to hold on to guys. We don't have retirement ceremonies. Guys go away, they come back, we recognize their success, they go on to TV, they go into private business, or whatever. It happens to all of them. Brady was only different because the owner had his back and because of Tom Brady. But as Belichick would tell you, he's just a football player. A really good, really talented football player at the most important position in the sport. So look, this is not me telling you that the Patriots are done. A lot of things had to go their way last year in order for them to get to the Super Bowl. People forget all that. Right? They forget that the Chargers should have been the playoffs, that the Ravens should have been the playoffs, that they played the Jacksonville Jaguars. They should have played on the road in Pittsburgh, if not for the stupid catch rule, which we still kind of don't really know what a catch is. Well, it's different, but it's the same, but it's different. Got it? Yep. Sure. Cool. Close enough. We've now gotten into the close enough. But they did get to the Super Bowl. They didn't punt in the Super Bowl. They still had the ball down five with the greatest quarterback in terms of Super Bowl success, postseason success in modern football history, with a chance to win the game. And he misread the coverage and he fumbled the football. But everybody forgets all that because we thought Bill Belichick lost his mind. He started making personal decisions instead of business decisions. That's not how it is with Belichick. It's always been business.
It's not personal. It's strictly business.
That's why Malcolm Butler didn't play. That's why he wanted to move on from Brady. Bill Belichick didn't forget football. He's forgotten more about football than all of us will know. You don't author the greatest franchise run and success story in modern sports history unless you're willing to at some point cut bait with players who've gotten over the hill. And the difference is that the ownership made it personal. And when that intersects with business, is what you have. I mean, look, that said, Patriots still have a great shot to win 11 games. You got Bills, Jets down the stretch. And, you know, you look around the sport and you're like, does anybody, if they have to go into Houston, do you think the Patriots are scared at all of the Houston Texans who just survived the Jets? The answer is no. A team they've already beaten this year. The answer is no. And by the way, the Texans have to go to the Eagles, who have remembered, like, hey, we're actually pretty good at football when we run the football. So there's a bunch of different stuff to get to. Cowboys and Colts analysis is easy. Patriots is a little bit harder, but you're going to have to admit that Bill Belichick knows what the hell he's doing. And if you don't believe me, I got 18 years of data to prove he knows what he's doing. He didn't all of a sudden lose his mind with Malcolm Butler, didn't all of a sudden lose his mind with his desire to find an heir apparent to Brady. You're not kidding the old man. He's forgotten more than we all know.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Trent Dilfer joins the show. Trent, of course, is a Super Bowl champion, quarterback guru. Find him on Twitter at Dilfer's Dimes. Check out the Elite11.com, the nation's premier quarterback competition. I don't think Tom Brady has reached that Jason Kidd can't make a layup in the playoffs, but we did see some age. How much of his age and maybe the age of Gronk were exposed yesterday in Pittsburgh?
You know, I think very little. I think it's the style of football they're trying to play doesn't suit not just Tom's skill set at this stage, but the overall offensive skill set. They obviously made a decision early in the year to play more of a big style of football, big offensive linemen, two-back offense, run the ball, play action, try to create big plays in the passing game to protect their defense, and it suited their offensive line personnel. It just hasn't been as successful as years past, and doesn't suit what Tom Brady does best, which is spread you out, make decisions at the line of scrimmage, make great decisions post-snap, and nip and pick you to death, basically death by a thousand cuts. And I think you're going to see him morph into that. I think the experiment's over because they haven't been explosive offensively, and it really hasn't protected their defense because they have more three and outs, they have shorter drives, they're putting their defense back on the field actually quicker because it hasn't been successful. So I think they're going to start spreading people out, more James White, create some space for Gronk because he definitely doesn't have the twitch in his body that he once had, but now he can use his big frame. It's a better style of football both for Tom Brady and for this offense.
Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. What about the Steelers? Did they prove anything to you?
I mean, they bother me. They can be so good and they can be so bad, and their ceiling's as high as anybody, but yet they just make knucklehead mistakes. And I don't know if they get hot. Yeah, I don't know how you stop them, but they tend to cool themselves down. So yeah, it was a nice victory for them. They obviously made some key plays at key times. It was huge considering they had lost three straight games. So they kind of played nicely with their back against the wall, but I don't think any differently of them today than I did before. They're a highly temperamental team, and they have been for years. They're not a team that is consistently good and does the little things well all the time. They rely upon being explosive, both on defense and offense.
Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. That's the voice of Trent Dilfer. Dilfer's Dimes on Twitter. Of course, go to Elite 11, the nation's premier quarterback competition. Look, I know there's a lot more thoughtful analysis in that the general manager has found Marlon Mack, so they have a legit running game. They fixed the defense. They've made Eric Ebron a much more effective player. And the Dallas Cowboys maybe weren't as good as they had been playing. But if I simply said, and this is what I said to start the show, like, look, I feel like the difference is just the quarterbacks. One's Daniel Jeremiah calls a tractor and a trailer, right? A tractor can pull the franchise. That's what Andrew Luck is. A trailer is somebody who needs everything around him and then can be along for the ride. That's Dak Prescott. too lame in an explanation for that?
No, I've always agreed with that. I mean, I was a trailer guy. I'd be the first to admit that. There's very few tractors, though. I think sometimes analysts use that as if there's a bunch of those guys in the NFL. There's very few. And even those guys need help. They have more dimensions to them. I always like to explain it as guys that have different dimensions. Andrew Luck can build any offense you want around him. He has zero limitations. Aaron Rodgers would be the same way. They're just guys that can do everything. Therefore, it gives you a lot of flexibility with the type of personnel you draft and type of systems you implement. Dak has to play the game a specific way. He's an either-or passer, and he's a pretty good one. He has some athleticism, so you got to utilize that. But he's not a guy that's going to be good under interior pressure. He's not going to be a guy that's going to get deep into his progressions. And he's not a very good vertical passer. He's okay. He's just not great, where Andrew Luck and Aaron Rodgers and others are great at it. And I think, you know, Dallas, too, and I'll give him a little bit of a pass. They're banged up offensively on the offensive line. They're not able to do the things they want to do. They had a lot of good plays that were called back for holding calls. Losing Zach Martin is a huge deal. The same way if Quentin Nelson didn't play for the Colts, we would say that's a huge deal. Having Tyron Smith banged up, I mean, he must have 5-6 holding calls over the last 2 weeks because he's a shell of what he once was physically. If they can get back healthy, they're a good football team. Not great, but good football team. And I'd say the same thing about the Colts. They're a good football team, not a great football team, but they played a heck of a lot better than the Cowboys.
Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. That's the voice of the one and only Trent Dilfer, joins us every Monday at this time. We haven't talked since the Chargers come back against the Chiefs. Let's first talk Chiefs. Okay, want to get to the Chargers in a second, but Chiefs. It looks like they're decent at running back, even though they've had to make a change there. They didn't have Sammy Watkins. And they didn't have the ball a bunch in the second half because they had a long drive and the Chargers had a long drive. But even though we all knew their defense wasn't good and ultimately let them down, isn't there something to that offense? They had a bad three and out when they could have won the football game and played it add-on. What's your takeaway now that we've had a couple days removed from that Chargers comeback against the Chiefs?
I think it's everything. Everybody knows the defense is terrible. And if they're going to beat people, they're going to have to outscore you. And they're going to have to hold the ball and they're going to have to have a lot of dimensions offensively outside of Patrick Mahomes just making plays to playmakers. What bothered me about that was they get the ball with 3:29, I think it was 3:29-ish, left in the game. They have a chance to end the game offensively.
Yep.
And their idea of a four-minute offense is a zone read lateral run to start the drive. And they get stuffed. And then it just snowballs from there and it's three and out. I've had a lot of great coaches in my career. I've learned from some of the greatest football minds ever. Even the Bill Walshes of the world believed in four-minute offense. You can't. There's something weird about football that at the end of the game, you got to be able to look at the other side of the line of scrimmage and say, we're going to run one of six plays. Try to stop us. We're not going to try to trick you anymore. And you have to have a certain amount of physicality and identity to be able to end the game with your offensive line, with your runner. Yes, you may throw it here or there, but that throw is going to come off of the run game. And they're still in the mindset of trying to trick people. And this goes back. If there's a criticism of Andy Reid over his Hall of Fame career, it's that he's had very few teams that have a finishing mentality, whether it's at the goal line, whether it's on third and short, or whether it's at the end of game. If you go back and look at the Philadelphia Eagles, his Kansas City Chiefs teams, this team, look at them in tight red zone situations, third and short, fourth and short situations in critical times, and especially four-minute offense. They just haven't been good. That's not the identity that's created. And to me, it's going to be their downfall because they're going to have a lead in the playoffs, and they're going to have somebody's going to kick them the ball, and they're going to have the ball and have a chance to end it, and they're not going to be able to end it. They're going to kick it back, and then that team's going to go down versus that poorest defense and score, just like what happened Thursday night.
What about the Chargers? It's hard to know what they'll look like. Hunter Henry just reported he's going to be practicing on the side, which means he'll eventually likely play in the playoffs. Don't know how healthy he'll be or how good he'll look, but that's another weapon. Remember, they had this comeback without Keenan Allen, who missed most of the game with a hip. He'll assuredly be back. And Melvin Gordon's going to be back as well. What are your thoughts on the Chargers now as we've seen them twice go on the road, twice fall behind, and twice come back against playoff teams in Pittsburgh and Kansas City?
Well, I've loved them from the get-go. We've had this conversation. I've been on the bandwagon early, mainly because their offensive line plays so much better. Also, for the most part, and the other night he made a couple of careless decisions, but Phillip has been so careful with the ball and really has changed the way he's read defenses. He's reading them up more than down, meaning the easy completion to the big play instead of the big play to the easy completion. They're an offense that on all cylinders is kind of like the great Patriots offense, where they can move, they can control the ball both by running it and throwing it. They can finish drives because they have multiple people they can target the red zone, or they can run it in with arguably, you know, one of the best backs in football when healthy, Melvin Gordon. They really have as many dimensions as anybody in professional football right now on offense. And they don't try to be sexy and sizzly. They try to be boring and just maul you to death. And then when you make a mistake, they have huge targets they can create big plays with. I think it's the best way to play offense. I think if you look at the course of the great offenses in the history of the NFL, most of them played that style of football, a balanced attack where they control the ball and have the ability to make big plays. Because of that, I think they're the best team in the AFC. Defensively, yeah, like everybody, they have holes, but they have difference makers on defense. And when you have difference makers, when you have Bosa's, when you have Derwin James, you know, guys like that, they can change the game. You could be struggling on defense, and one guy can change the game for you, and they have those players too.
Yeah.
I think they're the favorites in the AFC right now.
Wow. Wow. Who would have thought that? I mean, you and I both liked them, but that is a colossal, colossal statement. Let's get to the other side, to the NFC. What's wrong with the Rams?
They're funk, obviously. Defensively, and I think it was with you I mentioned this, the Wade Phillips dilemma. Over his course of his career, he's stubborn defensively with how he calls defenses. He's a great coach, and he's put great defenses on the field, but at the end of year, people figure him out. He has his two interior linemen of their game records that all they're caring about is sacking the quarterback, so they're out of position all the time in the run game. So they're getting killed in the A-gaps in the run game, which teams that are disciplined. And the secondary, because of the style of defense they play, they either play man and take a lot of chances, or they play zone and squat. There's big plays to be made. They'll make their share, but they're going to give up big plays. That scares me. Offensively, I'm not in panic mode. I'm not denying that they played like crud the last 2 weeks, but I'm not in panic mode just because the intellectual property on that staff with those players. Jared Goff's a very, very smart and talented player. Todd Gurley's a very, very talented and smart player. Brandon Cook's very smart, very talented. They have all the pieces it takes to turn this thing around, and obviously their coach is one of the great young coaches in football. I think they'll do a huge self-examination, call it a self-scout, where they'll look deeply into what they've done best this year, what things have given them problems, identify the cause, and I think they will finish strong and be on all cylinders going into the playoffs. But I think defense would be their downfall more than offense.
Why did the Vikings look so different yesterday?
You know, I was a little – typically that doesn't work. Head coach mandates run the ball well. Somebody becomes the fall guy. New guy comes in, and all of a sudden you run the ball better. That doesn't happen very often, but it happened on Sunday. I like some of the schemes. It wasn't that they just ran it more often. They ran it with better schemes. I thought the runners ran harder, both Murray and Cook. Dalvin Cook. I also think they did some things in the passing game that created some space. So instead of coming out and throw or just running and then throwing their old passing game, they came out obviously stubborn with the run, but they had some really cool movement and action plays off of it that created some space in the defense. So every time the Dolphins came down and tried to cheat the box, they had the ability to really make them pay. So all of a sudden the Dolphins were kind of hanging back a little bit and not cheating the box, and they were running the ball well. I thought the mixture in play calling, I thought the rhythm of play calling was much better. Is it sustainable? I don't think it's sustainable because I don't think they're very good up front. I think ultimately what's the problem with the Vikings, more than the play caller, more than the run-pass ratio, is they stink on the offensive line. And when you stink on that offensive line and it gets late in the year and people just say, you know what, they stink, we're going to maul them on the, with our defensive front, typically now you run into a wall and now you're stuck back trying to throw it all over the yard. So I think the Vikings are like eight other teams where they're good, maybe they can get hot, but ultimately they're pretenders.
Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. What about the Eagles, the Super Bowl champions with their Super Bowl winning quarterback suddenly look like world beaters last night? Was that just a must-win game and a good matchup, or have they really figured some stuff out?
I didn't think they looked like world beaters. I thought they looked okay. They did some good things. I've always thought that when healthy defensively, they're a headache, and they were to the Rams last night. Offensively, they had a couple plays they chucked up, worked out for them. I thought their schemes were a little more creative than they were with Carson Wentz. A lot of times, and this is a long conversation, I'll try to make it quick, but a lot of times coaches get lazy with great quarterbacks and they just say, you know what, the quarterback will save us. We don't have to grind out eight schemes this week. They're going to get people wide open. We'll just trust him to make plays. And when the backup plays, like, whoa, we got a all hands on deck. You know, every coach come up with four great schemes this week that we can get a guy down the seam, or we can get a screen play, or we can get something to cheat some yards. That's what it looked like to me, just from my exo-geeky standpoint, was I saw them do different things. I saw them do better things, and they worked. I think it caught the Rams off guard, and there was just a higher level of attention paid to the offensive schemes. I wish all teams did that even with their superstar quarterbacks, because even your superstar quarterback needs help sometimes.
Saints-Panthers tonight. Panthers have been an absolute mess. How much of the blame should lie at the feet of Cam Newton?
He played so good early, and then it got reckless, as has been his downfall in his career. He just gets reckless with the ball. I also think, you know, I've always said this, and it, you know, people don't like hearing the mechanics thing, but his mechanics are deeply flawed. And when he has to rush a downfield throw because of his shoulder tilt, because of his head movement, the ball is going to sail. I mean, we see in high school kids all the time, if you have a large shoulder tilt, if your head moves a lot when you throw the ball is going to sail on you. If you look at all of his bad throws, all his critical mistakes, it's the same story, and it's been the same story forever, that he has a mechanical flaw which causes him to sail the ball in big moments. And when you throw the ball high down the field in the NFL, you throw interceptions. Guys that miss low don't throw as many picks. Aaron Rodgers misses low. Tom Brady misses low. Drew Brees misses low. Cam Newton misses high. That's been his issue, and I think he deserves a large part of the blame. I think the story tonight, though, Doug, is that I think the Saints can plant their flag as the best team in football. I think that, like we said, the Chargers are the best team in the AFC, but I think the Saints tonight, if they can just railroad the Panthers and just say, you know what, this is our division, this is our year, we are as good as people are saying we are, and just railroad them, I think they can plant their flag as the front runner for the Super Bowl champion.
That'd be amazing. Amazing. Amazing stuff. Great breakdowns, dude. Thanks so much for joining us. We love it.
Always fun, brother.
All right, that's Trent Dilfer. Of course, follow him on Twitter at Dilfer's Dimes. We'll go to Elite11.com.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
The Andrew Luck is overrated, overpaid, overhyped crowd is having themselves a really, really difficult year. You know, I actually think the Andrew Luck is overrated, Andrew Luck is overpaid is... Remember when Steph Curry said last week, or maybe 2 weeks ago on a podcast, that he doubted, there's a group of them there, he doubted that we landed on the moon? And like, look, this is a common narrative. I remember this conspiracy theory when I was a kid about, hey, look, that could be a movie set, whatever. It's not the craziest statement. The problem is that there's all this, like, NASA was like, hey, look, do you want to actually come and see moon rocks? Do you want to actually come and see what we did? There's scientific data that points out, hey, we actually did land on the moon. Here are the people. Here are the trips. Here's the footage. Here's all the technology that was gained by our trips to the moon. It was really hard. We don't do it now because there's not a lot of benefit to it, but we did, in fact, do it. The same amount of scientific data appears with Andrew Luck for the people who are like, Andrew Luck's overrated. Really? That's funny because when he has a when he has a good offensive line and when he has any sort of running game, that dude is awesome, gets to the playoffs, and wins double-digit games, which they'll do this year. 23 touchdowns, 18 interceptions in his rookie season off a team that won, what, two games before he got there and got to the playoffs. 23 touchdowns and 9, then 40 touchdowns and 60 interceptions. Yeah, he's a turnover guy, but he's also a production machine. Andrew Luck's going to complete his highest percentage of passes. He's been a little bit safer with the ball. He'll probably get close to 40 touchdowns, and he'll have, I think, 10 wins. For a guy who didn't pick up a regulation-size football until training camp, I would say he's back. I would say he's not as good as advertised. He's probably better.